Welcome to this audio introduction to Whatever Happened to Phoebe Salt, written by Arthur Berry and directed for the New Vic Theatre by Abby Wright. The audio described performance is on Saturday the 21st of June at 2:15. The touch tour is at 1:15. We'll meet you at box office a few minutes before then. The programme tells us Phoebe Salt, born and raised in the industrial heartland of Stoke-on-Trent, spends her days working in the meat market, trapped in a daily grind of blood and bone. After work, yearning for glamour and adventure, she rehearses her role as a showman's assistant with a local town entertainer, and soon opportunity knocks. Will a talent show appearance help her finally escape the trials and tribulations of working life? Or does her fate have other plans? Arthur Berry, a master of capturing the soul of working class life, brings to life the grit and resilience of the people of Stoke-on-Trent in this striking drama. Whatever Happened to Phoebe Salt is filled with vivid storytelling and rich characters. But if you've not been to the New Vic Theatre before, here's some information about the auditorium. The auditorium is a purpose-built theatre in the round with tiered seats, purple in colour, with polished dark oak armrests, rising all around a flat circular stage, which is approximately 10 metres in diameter. The stage floor accommodates a number of concealed openings called traps, through which actors, props and scenery can be brought on and off stage. Three evenly spaced tunnel-like entrances lead up onto the stage. Two are used by actors and the audience, and the third, slightly larger main entrance, is used by actors and production staff. Thinking of a clock face, if the main entrance is at 12 o'clock, the other two entrances are at 4 and 8 o'clock. The 4 o'clock entrance leads out to door 4, near to box office, and the 8 o'clock entrance leads out to door 3, in the small lounge near to the lift. During the performance, we will call the 4 o'clock entrance the right entrance and the 8 o'clock entrance the left entrance. By the main entrance at 1 o'clock and by the left entrance at 9 o'clock, there's a section of acting space we call a notch. Behind the seating is a curved pathway known as the promenade. Five sets of aisle steps lead down from it to the stage. The promenade and aisles are used by both audience and actors. In the aisles, at the end of each row of seats, there's a small handrail to assist ascent or descent. Exit doors on the promenade lead out to door 1 in the bar and door 2 in the cafe. Perched above the promenade, accessed by stairs, is a balcony, edged with a safety barrier. It houses two rows of seats. Fixed high above the stage is a large lighting rig complete with walkways. This is known as the grid. Props and actors, yes, actors, may be stowed or suspended from the grid. Now for the set. Liz Evans, head of design, must have stripped bare the New Vic's props store for this show. As we take our seats, the stage is set for the first scene of the play, and I'm reminded of an early 60s TV programme, Steptoe and Son and their Rag and Bone Yard. The stage is piled high, cluttered and strewn with a jumble of household items. This is the back room of a shop in Waterloo Road, Burslem. The proprietor is one Cyril Pepper, and to him it's an antique shop called All Our Yesterdays. To others, a house clearance shop or even a junk shop. The year is 1982, but some of the items can date back to the 1960s, and this is when local government declared a slum clearance order on a number of properties in Burslem. Hidden beneath and amongst and part of this clutter is the set for the next scene. We travel back to 1957, before slum clearance, to Card Street and number 17, the mid-terraced house of the Salt family, and to their neighbour's hallway. This set is designed as a slice of a typical street of terraced houses in Burslem. The street. At the right-hand corner of the 12 o'clock main entrance stands a working lamppost. It illuminates Card Street's footpath and road. The main entrance is part of Card Street's worn footpath and grey gravelly tarmac road, which cuts across the stage floor to the 4 o'clock entrance and beyond, and lies parallel to the imagined wall and front doorstep of number 17. If we stand on the pavement and face the imagined wall, number 17's front door is to the left and the neighbour's front door is to the right of the wall. If we head towards 17's front door, it's one step up into the Minton-tiled hallway that leads directly to the 8 o'clock entrance. But wait, just beyond the threshold, to the right, we can take one step up into the living room. The living room is defined by an irregular quadrilateral-shaped plinth, the size of a typical living room in a terraced house. The floor is covered with lino, patterned with 12-inch tiles and half tiles in apple green, brown, turquoise, oatmeal, maroon and pale blue. Beyond the living room, we step down into the scullery, tiled with quarry tiles, and then into the 8 o'clock entrance, which leads out to the back. The neighbour's Minton-tiled hallway runs parallel to Salt's living room. A strip of stair carpet butted up to the Minton tiles and a hint of black and grey cross-hatch stair carpet on aisle step risers indicates the way to upstairs. Honouring Arthur Berry's unique style, on opposite promenade walls hang drapes painted with rows of terraced houses. The windows light up at night. But now back to the future. And the first scene and the back room of the shop occupying this space in 1982. The back way into the shop is along the Minton-tiled hallway of Salt's neighbour. Inside the shop and on the plinth, standing proudly centre stage as if the star of the show, is a 1960s Silver Cross pram rammed with miscellaneous items, including an electric kettle, a small plastic toy duck on wheels, a handheld copper megaphone, folded tablecloths, a pile of LPs, the top one Des O'Connor, and perched on top, not a bouncing baby, but a smiling, rather grubby, orange space hopper. The pram stands on a folded oval raffia mat. Off the plinth at 3 o'clock, a robust pull-along trolley laden with, amongst other things, a Eubank carpet sweeper, a wooden clothes maid, just like my Auntie Marge's, a large framed painting, a string of outdoor coloured lanterns, a padded stool, folded curtains and tablecloths, a battered red petrol can, a quilted tea cosy, a tennis racket and press, a white vitreous china toilet pan with black seat and lid, a hockey stick and a garden spade. On the plinth at 5 o'clock sits a yellow, grey and black round leatherette buffet. Off the plinth at 6 o'clock, there's a short three-tier narrow wall unit, a pile of children's board games tied up with string, including Cluedo, and a small tin of Quality Street sit on top of the unit. A curtain's fixed to hide the middle shelf. On the plinth at 7 o'clock is a metal toolbox. Off the plinth at 7 o'clock, there's a wooden dining chair holding a galvanised bucket bowl with water and scrubbing brush. Off the plinth and filling the 8 o'clock notch stand sizeable objects covered with a cream dust sheet. On the plinth at 9 o'clock, facing the centre, is a drop-leaf dining table with barley sugar legs, and on it, three odd table lamps, one missing its shade, folded tea towels held in place by a small cash box, a rush table mat, a plate of toast, a filled white sack leans against the table. Off the plinth at 9 o'clock, and at a right angle to the drop-leaf table, there's a sizeable object draped with a candy-striped flannelette sheet. At 11 o'clock, as if abandoned, a two-seater sofa slopes half on and half off the plinth. It's brown leatherette with wooden arms and a mattress-style seat cushion. On it, lying on its side, is a wooden stool with a woven rattan seat, a fold of fabric, a wooden cutlery tray with loose cutlery and boxed cutlery, and a woman's magazine. For the next scene and the rest of the play, the action takes place in the home of the Salt family, the neighbour's hallway, and the street outside. The cast and stage management in time lapse transform the shop into the house. Clutter is removed and furniture revealed. In the living room, at 11 o'clock, the sofa with added antimacassar is set with its back to the neighbour's hallway. The oval raffia mat, woven in pink, pale blue, green and cream, set in front of the sofa. And at 5 o'clock, there's the buffet. At 6 o'clock, the three-tier narrow wall unit with the Quality Street tin on top. On the middle shelf, a tin holding cold cream, talcum powder, a scent bottle, nail varnish. There's a tea caddy, boxes of beef suet, Kellogg's Rice Krispies, Kellogg's Corn Flakes, Coleman's Mustard and more. And on the bottom shelf, there's a cutlery tray and a feather duster. At 8 o'clock, the lino is worn where there's a step down into the scullery. At 9 o'clock in the living room, the drop-leaf table is set with a blue china milk jug, three cups and saucers, plates with toast, a small wooden tray and a ladies' magazine. Two dining chairs are set at either end of the table. At 10 o'clock on the floor next to the sofa is a wooden trunk. And now for the scullery. Packed into the 8 o'clock notch beneath the cream dust sheet are sizeable objects. There's a three-tier wire vegetable rack with vegetables nestling in newspaper-lined baskets. In front is a galvanised mop bucket and mop. Then a sturdy three-tier square unit laden with breadboard, a tea caddy, a Jacob & Co. biscuit tin. On the middle shelf, a cream enamel colander, a stack of saucepans, wooden spoons in a jar. On the bottom shelf, fairy liquid, a vase, a spare toilet roll. In front is an open blue metal toolbox displaying a loose tray of hand tools. Then a pale blue enamelled gas stove with white oven door, kettle on the top, and beneath it a white enamel washing up bowl and folded tea towel. To the right of the stove and of similar size, a cylindrical galvanised electric water heater with tap for drawing off warm water, set on a wooden plinth, a tray on the floor beneath the tap to catch the drips. Behind the water heater, an ironing board is propped up against the wall and a brushless stale. The 8 o'clock entrance wall holds a couple of coat pegs, and this entrance leads out to a paved yard and washing line. A dirt path leads down to the pigsty and the back gate. At 9 o'clock, beneath that candy-striped flannelette sheet, there's a cream-coloured Belfast sink. It sits on a plank held between brick pillars. The sink has a working coal tap, a narrow wooded slatting draining board to the left with tea towel, dishcloth and a bar of soap. Beneath the sink is a white enamel bucket with rope handle. Now I'll hand you over to Mim Bernard to describe the characters and their costumes.
As Brenda has said, the opening scene of the play is set in the early 1980s. In the back room of a house clearance shop on Waterloo Road in Burslem, we meet three of the main characters. Cyril Pepper, the shop owner, who's in his mid-60s, Thomas Frizzell, his melancholic helper, aged about 40, and Phoebe's Auntie Elsie, who loves to gossip and who's in her 50s. However, the main action is set back in the late 1950s, when much of the junk in the shop disappears and we find ourselves in a terraced house in Card Street, the home of Phoebe Salt and her parents. In keeping with the times and the setting, many of the costumes tend to be a little shabby. Some are homemade looking and most are in muted shades of brown, beige and charcoal. Cyril, played by Andy Pollard, is an ex-school teacher. He's a very tall, theatrical sort of fellow, stockily built and with short blonde hair. When we first meet him, he's dressed in a well-worn, thigh-length, oatmeal-coloured knitted cardigan over a knitted beige waistcoat, a white shirt and brown flannel trousers with turn-ups. Tan brogues, a brown beret and brown bow tie, a short mustard brown and cream striped knitted scarf and heavy rimmed spectacles on a chain complete Cyril's look. He's also carrying a large umbrella and a pile of paperbacks tied with string. 25 years earlier, his cardigan has disappeared and his waistcoat is now a beige checked one. He wears a camel-coloured double-breasted wool overcoat, a mustard yellow beret, and sports a green patterned bow tie. He no longer has his glasses on a chain. Cyril's great hobby is show business, and he has an amateur cabaret act with Phoebe. Later, when rehearsing to take part in a talent show, he dons an intentionally too small emerald green velvet dinner jacket with black shawl collar, striking olive green and black check trousers, a grey felt trilby with a blue band and a deflated yellow balloon hanging from the brim, and a single Wellington boot. Phoebe Salt is just 19 and is played by Isabella Rossi. Feisty, quick-witted and clearly wanting more out of life, by her own description, she likes to flaunt herself. At night, she tells us that she paints her face and her toenails and helps Cyril Pepper on stage to raise money for charity. This is in sharp contrast to the 3 days a week she works for butcher Jerry Dewsnap, selling meat in the market. Although she has a long-suffering fiancé, Arnold Winkle, she is also seeing her married boss, the butcher. Phoebe is of average height and slim. Her very dark brown shoulder-length hair is smoothed back at the sides and top and fastened in a curly ponytail. She wears makeup, bright red lipstick and scarlet nail polish. Yellow, knotted stud earrings or small ceramic flower ones is her jewellery of choice. Phoebe has quite a few costume changes, including two different knee-length, 50s-style full-gathered skirts. One is horizontally striped in black and a red and pink floral pattern, and paired with a primrose yellow, short-sleeved knitted top. The other resembles orange and yellow tulips on a cream and blue background. This is worn with a button-through, pale blue knitted top, and with beige lacy court shoes trimmed with bows and a matching handbag. She wears two macs at different points too. The first is stone-coloured with three-quarter length sleeves and a deep collar. The other, worn right at the end of the play, is black. We also see her in a scruffy, button-through, floor-length mid-blue dressing gown over a red petticoat and with red fluffy slippers on her feet. For the talent show rehearsal, Phoebe puts on a knee-length purple satin dress. Sleeveless, halter-necked and ruched all over, it has a contrasting pink trim at the low neckline and at the hem, as well as clusters of plastic flowers and bows at both hips. The straps and top of a blue petticoat are visible too, and her look is finished off with elbow-length tan nylon evening gloves and a pinky-orange feathered headdress. Matt Jones plays Cyril's melancholic helper, Thomas Frizzell. Aged in his early 20s during the main action of the play, he's of medium height and slightly built. He has short brown hair and is cleanly shaven. Thomas is a window cleaner and dresses in similar attire during both eras. He wears a pale grey shirt, loose-fitting dark grey corduroy trousers with turn-ups and black, heavy, lace-up work boots. As a young man, he adds a grey V-neck tank top, a striped tie, a hip-length blue cotton twill work jacket and a brown flat cap. In his 40s when the play opens, and now wearing glasses, these are replaced with a teal, subtly striped V-neck jumper, a steel blue cotton bomber jacket and a maroon woolen beanie. Phoebe's mother, Nellie, is played by Laura Costello. Nellie is only in her late 30s, but looks weary and somewhat older than her years. Of average height and build, her straight, mid-brown, shoulder-length hair is worn under a fine hairnet and pinned back on both sides with grips. She dresses in a heavy, pleated, knee-length grey check skirt, worn with one of two button-through cotton blouses, one in duck egg blue, the other sandy coloured. For much of the play, her skirt and blouse are covered by that 1950s housewife staple, a patterned V-neck wrap-over apron tied at the waist. Nellie's faded floral version is in shades of blue, green and pale orange. She wears a dull pink knitted cardigan over the top of it and navy blue sheepskin slippers. At one point, when she arrives home after being out, she is wearing a plain, stone-coloured button-through mac with a small-brimmed brown felt hat and brown lace-up shoes and is carrying a large striped shopping bag. She has also swapped her pink cardigan and apron for an inky blue short-sleeved cardigan. Sammy Salt is much older than his wife, in his 60s, and is Phoebe's stepfather. Played by Alistair Baker, he's grumpy, bad-tempered, preoccupied with his sow, which is about to give birth in the backyard, and not a well man. Just shy of 6 feet tall and stockily built, he is clean-shaven, grey-haired and thinning on top. He wears a collarless, striped cotton shirt under a dark purple, knitted V-neck tank top. Over the tank top is a charcoal grey striped waistcoat and an old, charcoal, ill-fitting woolen jacket and baggy trousers. Worn black lace-up work boots, thick grey woolen socks and a grey flat cap complete his look. Next door to the Salts lives Nellie's sister, Elsie Begley. Played by Tracy Ann Wood, Nellie is a slightly younger, less worn version of Nellie, with dark brown curly bobbed hair. When we first meet her at the start of the play in the 1980s, she's put on a heavy dark purple and green cardigan over a lilac and white gingham housecoat and wears a grey and pink headscarf tied under her chin. She's in black lace-up shoes and clutching a purse. Back in the 1950s, she has two daytime outfits. One is a horizontally striped, V-necked, button-through day dress, which falls to just below her knees. The wide stripes alternate between apple green bands and pink floral ones. Over the dress, she wears an olive green, fine knitted cardigan. Her other daytime outfit is a short-sleeved pink blouse, worn with a vertically striped skirt. The stripes are yellow and lilac, and have floral patterns overlaying them. She wears a paisley print, square-necked, full apron over her daytime outfits and dark red slippers. Butcher, Jerry Dewsnap, is played by Perry Moore. Of average height and slightly built, Jerry is a smartly dressed man of about 40. His medium-length, light brown hair is slicked back and he sports a moustache. A flashy, hail fellow, well-met kind of man, he dresses smartly in a grey, pinstriped, single-breasted three-piece suit, white shirt with a spotted dark grey tie and tie pin, and black lace-up shoes. Over this, he wears a white butcher's coat and a navy and white striped butcher's apron. He also has a good quality dove grey overcoat with a black velour collar. Phoebe's 19-year-old fiancé, Arnold Winkle, is played by Elliot Goodhill. Described by Arthur Berry as a pleasant-looking, nondescript sort of youth, Arnold is slimly built, 5 feet 9 inches tall, cleanly shaven and with short blonde hair. He cares deeply for Phoebe, works at the co-op and lives with his widowed mother. He is simply attired in a black woolen two-piece suit, white shirt with a checked blue and green woolen tie and a slate blue button-through knitted waistcoat. His shirt sleeves are fastened with metallic armbands above the elbow, and he wears black lace-up shoes. Mrs. Winkle is played by Erica Poole. In her mid-50s, short and with neatly curled silver hair, she is a timid, bespectacled and matronly figure. Beneath an olive-green, mid-calf-length coat, she wears a plum-coloured check tweed skirt, duck-egg blue blouse and a peach-coloured diamond-patterned cardigan. On her head is a small brown straw hat fastened with a hat pin, and round her neck she wears a cream and green patterned headscarf. She carries a shabby brown handbag over her arm and wears thick beige stockings and flat, plain brown lace-up shoes. That almost completes our introduction, but please listen on for the credits. Whatever Happened to Phoebe Salt is directed by Abby Wright. Liz Evans is the designer of the set and the costumes, and the lighting designer is Daniela Beatty. Simon Slater is the sound designer, composer, and Caroline Hetherington, the vocal coach. The stage management team is Steve Hall, Kate Wilcock, and Kat Hodgson. We hope you enjoy the show.